When personal finance connects you to both your funds and the stuff that matters, that's money. And that's Cash App. Know what else is money?
Using Cash App to request that $50 your cousin owes you.
Actually, finally, getting that $50.
Easily divvying up those pizza and wing checks before your boys have a chance to slip out.
Tipping the delivery guy when you're flat out of cash.
Hearing an awesome musician on the train home and tipping their cash tag.
Sending everyone in your family group chat a dollar just because.
Splitting the cost of tickets to that really expensive sporting event you were afraid you were going to have to foot the bill for.
Watching your paycheck grow without you lifting a finger.
Collecting all that money for your fantasy football winnings.
Or at least easily shelling out that money for your fantasy football dues.
Getting paid to read a wonderful ad script from my good friends at Cash App.
Sending, spending, saving, splitting, tipping, donating, gifting, or just typing numbers, all with the number one finance app in the App Store, that's money. That's Cash App.
Download Cash App from the App Store or Google Play Store today to create your own Cash Tag.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. People always say it's good to unwind, but that's easier said than done. The exception, Chumba Casino. They actually make it easier done than said, or at least the same. Chumba Casino is an online social casino with hundreds of casino-style games like slots and blackjack. Play for fun. Play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sign up now and collect your free welcome bonus at chumbacasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. Joining me once again, probably the person I have done the most audio with ever, at least in discussing wrestling. He is the owner and proprietor of WrestleNomics. You guys should know him as well. He's coming to us live from Buffalo, New York, or perhaps a suburb of Buffalo, New York. I'm not sure exactly his current location. It's Brandon Thurston.
Yes. Hello. Yes. I'm in the Western New York area for sure.
If we were like showing if this was like a TV, like a sports game or a wrestling event somewhere, would we be showing like shots of like downtown Buffalo to imply that's where you were, even if you're not actually in Buffalo?
There'd be shots. There'd be B-roll of chicken wings. People stirring up chicken wing sauce and chicken wings in a bowl and putting it into a deep fryer. Yes, maybe Niagara Falls, even though that's some 40, 45 minutes away from downtown Buffalo. Yeah.
Yeah, those are like the B-roll staples for like any like Monday Night Football Bills game or something like that.
Yeah, I think they did when the Bills played in primetime last time, whenever that was, they did show downtown Buffalo. They did show City Hall. And it's in its phallic like shape and the Niagara Square there, which is like the downtownest of downtown.
Yeah. I mean, the Patriots play really nowhere close to Boston.
Foxborough.
Yeah, they're in Foxborough. And if you've ever been to Foxborough, there's not much to see in Foxborough outside of the area around Gillette Stadium. So they usually just show like the Paul Revere statue and like the old
and the Bills, church. The Bills play in Orchard Park,
yeah,
which is another 40 minutes south. Then they'll show Niagara Falls, and that's like you're driving almost an hour to get from Orchard Park to Niagara Falls.
I was gonna say, yeah, you're like on the other side. You might as well start showing like Detroit or something like that. Like,
and you know they're building the new stadium. I don't know if you watch, if anybody's watched
it. Right next door.
Gonna build it and just keep it right there in the suburbs. They could have, you know, cremated the Perry projects and maybe built a stadium there, but for whatever reason, you know, they didn't want to do that.
Is it are you paying for this Highmark Stadium? Oh,
we are definitely paying for it. Yes, we are absolutely paying for this. We're helping Terry Pegula out because we don't want him have to have him pay for it himself.
They used to threaten to move the team to Toronto. Is that still the alternative?
I think that was when the NFL was in its dark days and like when there were still like blackouts and stuff like that. which like I think is just not even a rule anymore, right? There's no more NFL TV blackouts.
There's no TV blackouts. Yeah. I remember like maybe like 10 years ago, I think the Bills played like a home game in Toronto.
Yeah,
that was like like everyone was like, oh, they're testing the waters to see if they're going to go to Toronto.
Yeah, I remember anyway. That. Donald Trump almost bought the Bills before, I think, in the process of Pegula getting it.
I've heard that as a wishful alternative scenario where
alternate timeline
just occupied his time owning the Buffalo Bills instead of doing something else. Mm-hmm. But hey, you guys have a successful football team kind of out there, so congratulations.
Yes, maybe we'll see what happens when we meet the Chiefs in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll see. We'll see if you guys even get a chance to face off against one another. Anyway, I'm actually going to the Bills Patriots game the first week of January, like the week 18 game, because I was able to secure my sister got free tickets from a coworker.
I bet nobody wants to go to week 18 Patriots.
That's what I'm going to watch, and it's like I hope it's like a 40 degree day, but obviously first week in January, kind of anything is possible. But I've never been to a regular season game before.
I imagine there's going to be a lot of empty seats. You should take a lot of pictures for social media and post them online and decry how what's his name?
Drake May,
Bob Kraft, Robert Kraft. He's going out of business here. He's running a failing franchise.
Yeah, like he has that current TV deal, but like what's going to happen when that's done?
That TV deal is going to expire in 10 years or something like that.
Yeah. And then where are they going to be? It is a discussion that like the stadium's not full anymore. Like that's something that people are talking about in the New England area that like the goodwill from the Super Bowl years has publicly, I think, really worn off. I'm still like, whatever. I don't demand a winner currently, but I would say that we're reaching the point of where that goodwill has officially been worn off, and fans are really impatient.
Are people going to relocate from the New England area to Chapel Hill to cheer on Bill Belichick?
There are plenty of people relocating from New England to North Carolina, just in general. our good friend Chris Gullo, he's not from New England, but he's down there.
He moved to Asheville, though. Is Asheville close to Charlotte?
I think they're pretty far. Asheville's like in the far western portion of the state, kind of near like the Appalachia, like closer to like Tennessee-ish area. And Charlotte is like right on the North Carolina, South Carolina border. Like I would imagine they're a couple hours at least apart.
Well, Chapel Hill is not even near Charlotte. It's 2 hours away from Charlotte. Asheville is closer. You know, but Asheville is all the way on the other side of Charlotte, so even further from Chapel Hill.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Okay. Anyway, what you're really here to discuss is I wanted to talk about WWE heading into 2025 from a business perspective, and there's nobody better to talk about that than Brandon Thurston. I guess we'll start. Raw is going to debut on Netflix on January 6th. This is obviously a really highly anticipated day on the WWE calendar. This is something where I think the company has been working towards for a very long time in terms of getting just a major presence on Netflix, which is, I think, considerably the biggest streamer in the country, if not the world.
By far.
Yeah, unless you want to count like YouTube or something like that. But from the
subscription service,
paid subscription service. This is
more than traditional cable.
Yeah. I mean, this is the big, big deal for them. And I would think if I was WWE, I'd be feeling really optimistic and really positive about this. What is your just general expectation, I guess, for WWE going to Netflix?
I don't know. A lot of hype. Like the hope is that it's going to increase their reach so much. Somewhat like the theories of the benefits would be of them going to Fox with SmackDown some 5-6 years ago, is that they'll be in more households than ever. And meanwhile, keep in mind, they're not only standing in Netflix, the biggest streamer by far, but they're also standing with SmackDown on the USA Network with its 65 million and dwindling number of households that it's in. And they're also standing in broadcast, catching probably an incremental few million households by just being on broadcast that may not have access to the other two. So they're going to be in the maximum number of households that, you know, realistically a wrestling company can be in. That should make it more easy to consume the content, the most important thing in our lives, and then therefore maybe watch it on other platforms, whether that's Peacock or USA Network or CW, or buy tickets or buy merchandise. That in theory, that should help their business, their consumer business out a lot.
We saw when we're talking about like the SmackDown on Fox move, we were at the time, there was a lot of discussion about, you know, this can, and there was a lot of, if I recall correctly, there was a lot of bullishness on the stock price, in the sense of this is going to really help grow our other revenue streams, because we're going to get a new boom period being on Fox. We're going to get way
more people. It never been on weekly broadcast every single week.
We're going to get content. Way more people. We're going to be advertised during NFL games. Mm-hmm. And they did eventually kind of hit a boom period, but it was not, I would say, directly in relation to that airing on Fox. But I think a major difference between then and now in terms of popularity is that when they jumped to Fox, the product was pretty cold. It was not a great time for WWE from a popularity perspective. They had been sliding for a number of years across a variety of metrics.
It happens coinciding literally, like exactly with the timing of AEW Dynamite debuting, where fans now have a pretty strong alternative to WWE at that time. This happened at the same time in October 2019. And I think, you know, the two, you know, advents of distribution that they got that did help their business or did coincide with improving fan metrics was the introduction of the WWE Network. More people watched the pay-per-views. Downstream effects happened there. And then I think a couple of years after this SmackDown moment in 2021, where they go put all those pay-per-views onto Peacock, even more people have access to those pay-per-views. Downstream effects there. And then Vince leaving allows the creative to improve. And now, distribution and content, both of these things have to be good. One without the other is okay. But if you got both of them actually functioning properly, that's when your business really improves. Mm-hmm.
So as we head to this Netflix jump, they are heading in with, I think, a lot more positive outlook from a business perspective, vibes. And a vibes perspective, and just an overall fan optimism. The WWE fan, I think, in general, has become extremely optimistic about the direction that the company is headed in, where the storylines are going, where wrestlers on the card are positioned and how they're performing. And I think there was a lot more pessimism when you go back into the Fox News, the Fox move backwards.
Fox obviously, is a different wrestling organization.
I know. Yeah. Obviously, I think, you know, a major part of that is, and like my personal belief in terms of like one of the major, major reasons WWE has been able to sustain its success over the last few years is the fans trusting Paul Levesque in a way that they never trusted Vince McMahon. There's just so much more optimism that the time that fans are investing in a product will be paid off with the creative, which was not the case when Vince was in charge. So there's just such a better atmosphere. So that we're heading into Netflix with that. To me, the thing about the Netflix present Raw being on Netflix is I do think it's an unknown. We just don't know what the overall long-term outcome and ramifications of it being on Netflix are going to be. This is the first time I can think of that Netflix is investing in like a live weekly product that it's going to presumably want to push
52 weeks a year.
Yes, 52 weeks a year. And Netflix's model in terms of what they advertise is very like one-time event oriented, in the sense of they have done these, you know, events that we saw, I'm sure you talked about on WrestleNomics, the Jake Paul and Mike Tyson fight. They have the NFL games coming up on Christmas Day. They've had other major singular events before. When they have their new series drop, whether it's a new movie that they invested a ton of money in, they do these advertising pushes for, you know, a week or two, letting people know it's coming out soon. When it hits, it's in everyone's carousel, but it ultimately gets replaced by something else that's coming in. And I do wonder, how are they going to handle what has been what is a very sizable investment in terms of what they're paying to get WWE content on their streaming service. And how is that marketed and balanced with all of the other things that Netflix is doing? I'm sure during the first initial, you know, few weeks or months or even the first year that Raw is on Netflix, it will be heavily pushed on the Netflix service. But as more investments come in, as new projects get launched, how much are they paying Raw per year? Do you know that?
So remember, they're not only getting the Raw rights, but they're also getting
the international.
So yeah. I think just the domestic Raw piece is $385 million per year, somewhere in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But overall, it's more than $500 million per year for the addition of the international rights. That'll increase as time goes on.
That's an enormous amount of money, right? But Netflix will spend $200 million on a movie that they budgeted. So In the grand scheme of what Netflix invests, this is not to me like, you know, the deal with USA, right? Where like WWE is what's keeping the lights on at USA for the most part. That's how they've often valued WWE programming. To me, over the long term, like, is how is Raw going to be presented as a major consistent weekly event? Especially because you're going to reach a maximum, right? Of people are going to eventually know WWE is on Netflix, and they're either going to tune in or they're not. And what are we looking at a year or two from now in terms of WWE's presence on Netflix? Because I'm sure it's going to be big at first.
Yeah, I guess it'll be interesting to see. And I guess like everybody's experience will be different based on, you'll always be able to wonder, well, maybe somebody else's algorithm is different because we're all getting served different things, probably based on what we actually watch or what we put on our lists or whatever. But I would think the visibility of Raw will be pretty prominent on Mondays, especially on Monday evenings, so that, you know, you can watch it and into Tuesday probably, so you can catch up on it. I guess to compare it again to the Fox relationship, it is interesting to look back and look at all the shoulder programming that they had on Fox on FS1 at first. And that stops before that relationship is halfway over. WWE Backstage goes away and whatever other programs they had on FS1, where it probably became apparent to Fox that we're not going to make our money. This deal is not going to work out the way we thought it would. We're not going to get the advertising dollars or the ratings out of this that we thought we were going to get. I don't know what the calculus is for Netflix. They're experimenting in an ad business for the first time. It's probably not the end of the world if it's a similar situation to Fox in that they don't get all the money that they wanted out of it because they're building a new business. It's not like Fox where you have a very well-established advertising business. It's something that's relatively inexpensive compared to movies, like you mentioned, compared to whatever other big sports, you know, more popular sports they might get into. So there might be some, you know, good opportunity cost, even if they don't make their money back on, you know, the $500 million a year that they're going to be spending on Netflix content or on WWE content. I've grown a little bit more optimistic about the positive downstream effects that this will have for WWE as time goes on, as we've gotten closer to the debut. And as I've realized that Netflix has exceeded and will continue to exceed any cable network for household coverage, because it's now in, they don't break out just US alone, but they put it with Canada. But if you just extrapolate based on the sizes of the populations, they're in like 70 million homes. And that's just subscribers, not considering that everybody's sharing their passwords across different households. Meanwhile, cable is now in 65 million. And that's going to continue to decline over time.
I was just looking this up. Netflix paid $150 million for two NFL games, just the two.
Is that the Christmas games?
That's the Christmas Day games.
Wow.
So that's the kind of money we're talking about, what they're going to be investing in and things like that. I think that I also wonder, like you mentioned, like, so when you go on Netflix, what does the person see, right? They have this big, the first thing you see is this big thing that's like whatever they're pushing. For me right now, it is this appears to be an animated series called Arcane that I think is based on like League of Legends games. Like that's what I see as like that. And I'm sure, I don't know if everyone gets that when they log on, but
I would tell you what mine is, but I don't have a Netflix account anymore. I did sign up for a time for the McMahon documentary.
Yeah. So I'm sure is my algorithm playing into this? Maybe. My algorithm is also bonkers insane because multiple people have used this Netflix account to watch a wide variety of things. So, and then after that, it's something called your next watch, which is like recommended content. It's shows that I watched or more prominently Korean dramas that my roommate used to watch when my Netflix.
You don't have like separate user accounts set up? There's different user accounts, right?
Oh, she uses my account. I don't know. That's what's logged into the TV screen. So in the main room. So Crash Landing on You, When the Phone Rings, some presumably Korean dramas. Then I've got games because Netflix has video games now. Not really sure what's going on there. And then we have a top 10 movies in the US today. And then some more recommended content, some more games, and then it kind of starts breaking into genre stuff. So I'm assuming that like when Raw debuts, they will be the first thing most people will see in terms of like that big prime spot on Netflix. The Netflix home screen is going to be Monday Night Raw. How long will that be? Will that be every Monday? Will that be consistent for every Monday? I'm not sure. But I think that's really in a lot of ways, like I feel like kind of what WWE is aiming for, which is to be in that this League of Legends arcane, this League of Legends show right now that I'm looking at, that is in like the greatest advertising spot in all of entertainment. It is number one on that Netflix load screen, at least for me. Maybe it's different for other people. And I think that's what WWE wants to be. How consistent that is and how long it lasts there, it will be interesting to see.
We'll get numbers of some sort. We will get Netflix updates their top 10 most watched TV shows and movies list every week. So we'll get global numbers is what we'll get, which it'll be impossible to pull out a US number to compare that to the current US numbers, but we'll get some numbers. So we will get an idea, I think, as long as it makes it into the top 10, it could always go below the top 10 and then we would not know. But on the occasions where it does, I assume it will, then we'll get some idea of whether it's increasing or decreasing in viewership. I'm sure the first one will be probably the biggest, like all these debuts are.
Yeah, and I'm also curious, like the Netflix viewer, habitually, how do they consume their product? Is not necessarily like a regular TV show where you watch a new episode each week. You know, Netflix, you know, really, I don't want to say pioneered, but really perfected the model in terms of let's release all our episodes at once. People will watch an entire series in a couple of days and then move on to the next thing. That's the habits that people that are viewing Netflix are in. Are they going to be consistently invested in something that comes out once a week, even if they, you know, maybe enjoy the WWE product or they sample it and they enjoy it? I'm really kind of interested. It's maybe going out on a limb in terms of trying to factor into what how it will kind of impact WWE. But I'm kind of curious to be like the viewership habits that Netflix has crafted its user base to have. How does that translate to a weekly programming like WWE?
I think it'll just be like any, like it always has been, right? Most people will watch it live. The global element will be different, will make it different, but at least domestically, most people will watch it live. Some people will watch it within the next 3 days. Mm-hmm. A few more people will watch it within 7 days, and that's pretty much it. I think the consumption will be, at least for people who are living within the US time zones, it'll be pretty much what it always has been.
When SmackDown moved to Fox, we saw a really like tectonic shift in terms of for the first time really ever, it feels like SmackDown became the preferred A show for WWE. The biggest stars in WWE were moved over to SmackDown.
Obviously, and had the biggest viewership easily.
Yeah, because of the network television reach. Yeah. And it I think it kind of took a number of years. Just because Raw habitually was what had been people designated as the A show. But I do think that they eventually turned SmackDown into the A show after a couple of years, certainly when you know the company got hotter again and the Roman Reigns heel turn and everything like that kind of helped blossom things on that brand. we're now just going to totally see a shift back to the rightful order of things. Raw is definitely going to be the A show from a priority standpoint. Do you think that would be pretty easy for WWE just to shift people's attention back to Raw?
I don't see why not. I think the issues in the past are all issues when Vince McMahon was in control of creative and he was less disciplined, and he found it hard to execute what he was, trying to execute. And I think, like, remember too, like, there's a factor in that the U.S. is going to be virtually the only country where it's only Raw that's on Netflix. All of the other countries around the world, the UK, Canada, Australia, these big English speaking markets, eventually India will be, all the W content will be on Netflix in India. So it's not just going to be Raw, although that's the biggest piece of it, is the domestic piece. But I think, you know, I think probably Raw will be, at least for January, will have the highest priority. But it would behoove WWE to keep SmackDown really strong too, so that you have another really strong TV property that you can continue to deal and get. What are they getting, 286, 287 per year for SmackDown now? And that deal is only on a 5-year deal, not like Netflix that is at least 5, maybe 10, maybe 20. So they're going to have to renew SmackDown in 5 years, and they want USA or Netflix or whoever to pay a big increase for SmackDown when it's up.
And I haven't heard anything about like a brand extension or a draft or something like that. So it, to me, it looks like we're heading into 2025, the WrestleMania season, starting in January. Obviously, you could have talent on both shows. I don't think anyone would really complain about it. Nobody really ever has. But it does seem like, you know, Roman Reigns in the Bloodline, which I think most people would say is the biggest angle in the company, and presumably if The Rock were to get involved at some point in the lead up to WrestleMania, which remains a possibility for sure. Are we going to see all that happen on SmackDown on Friday nights on USA, or are we going to see that happen more on Netflix on Raw? I think as it currently stands, the separate brands, separate rosters for each brand have really helped WWE, I think, organize like a star system and have make each show feel unique in the sense of they haven't really mixed up the rosters too much.
That's an interesting question, because like all the Roman Reigns stuff is on SmackDown. He's right. Gotten Fridays as his day when he's there, and everybody else who's involved in his storyline is also still on SmackDown. But yeah, but that's not going to, it's probably not going to be the priority, at least for a few months, for when the switch happens.
Right. So maybe we just see talent move over to Raw. Like my guess would be if they want to keep the brand separate, which I would seem like Paul Levesque probably wants to do, given that they've been separate for I think his entire creative run here. Some sort of draft or something where the bigger stars do get moved over to Raw, given the priority that programming should have over SmackDown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree.
I wanted to talk about John Cena, who's having this retirement tour throughout 2025. Do we have any sense on like how often we're going to see John Cena? It seems like it's going to be on like at least a semi full-time basis.
I got the impression that he's going to be at the debut. He's definitely going to be on the debut episode of Raw on Netflix. Mark Shapiro said as much the other day, Monday or whatever it was. He's definitely going to, I think he's going to be at Royal Rumble. I think he's going to be at Elimination Chamber. Definitely going to be at WrestleMania, and I assume he'll do something right at the end of the year in December 2025. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it'll be a push of this is the last in whatever market he's in. You know, this is the last time you're going to see John Cena. I don't expect it's going to be 40 weeks out of the year, but you know, maybe 20 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe house shows even.
Yeah, I'm wondering like how many matches he works this year. In terms of, you could probably look into like what his like movie schedule is too. Like if he has any major projects lined up for 2025 and how much time it would take for him to at least work around that. I'm really kind of interested in how they utilize Cena. I think in his last several kind of runs with the company, a lot of them were, you know, brief runs for building up to a WrestleMania or something like that. You know, he has been used to work with a lot of younger talent, and conventional booking wisdom would tell you that the optimal, you know, John Cena, he's a huge star. This is the last, you know, he's on his last run here. Let's use him to put over some younger stars because they're going to need the boost of, you know, beating a legend like John Cena. And when John Cena's gone, we have these new young stars that have beaten John Cena and we can elevate up the card. I'm really curious to see if that's what they end up doing, because I would suggest that that's not what they should do. I would definitely, if I was WWE, I'd be looking at what are the major, major programs that we can use John Cena in that will draw huge for this year. I would say, you know, John Cena versus Roman Reigns, John Cena versus CM Punk, John Cena versus Cody Rhodes. All those guys are baby faces right now, but
Rock. You could do another Rock match.
If that's presuming the Rock is around for, but you could I think that using Cena to put over Austin Theory was a huge waste. And it was a waste for a number of reasons. And I feel like if they're going to use Cena's going to come back for one more year. He's going to draw regardless because he's a huge star. But I feel like you're leaving so much money on the table. B, I don't see, with the exception of maybe Bron Breakker, I don't see a ton of young talent in WWE right now that would really like benefit hugely on their path to major stardom by beating John Cena in a feud. And also, John Cena's never been any good at actually like elevating talent that was clearly beneath him. We saw that with the Austin Theory feud. We saw it in the past when he really needed to elevate some guys like Sheamus or The Miz, or probably most famously when he was feuding with the Nexus. Like, he did not help those guys really get over as much as kind of steamroll them and knock them back down the card and expose them as not charismatic or good enough.
Has it been different? I would say so. I don't have an opinion. I assume you're right about that. Like, is that kind of a Triple H thing of once Triple H was a creative, a booker rather than the wrestler, he babyfaced himself with the internet, but he became very good at like elevating and developing talent. Has it been different though since Cena? And I would say this post 2015 period where he has not been a full-time wrestler, where he has been doing other things. AJ Styles comes to mind as somebody who obviously had a really well-developed career before he came to WWE, but he wasn't really known to WWE fans. And I think that feud with Cena in 2016 really helped elevate AJ Styles at a time where like maybe he was just going to be Chris Jericho, the pit bull, Chris Jericho's partner.
Yeah, I guess my assessment, like my personal opinion would be, if Cena is working with a really, really talented person that is relatively his equal, like his feuds with CM Punk were great. And certainly, I think, helped CM Punk. I think his feuds with Edge helped Edge to a degree. I think when he's working with talent at that level, it's okay. But when he's been asked to like, hey, John, we really need you to make a new star. We really need you to go out of your way to help this wrestler who we were optimistic on their potential. I just don't think he's any good at that. And I think it would be kind of a waste for John Cena to use this run when there's so much more money on the table with bigger feuds. And I think from a business perspective, and I don't know how involved they would be, but think of like the UFC guys, or think of Ari Emanuel. And if they had a John Cena level box office draw, they wouldn't be, oh, let's put him with a young and up and coming fighter. And see, you know, if that fighter wins, then that'll be really good because then we can use that fighter for more draws. They would be like, what's some major match between another equal legend that we can do to squeeze more money out of this? Mm-hmm. I think that's what their approach would be. And I think that's what the approach should be for Cena. I think it'd be way like more interesting and better if he did those feuds too, like just from a fan perspective. But I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't see like Ari Emanuel and Mark Shapiro really weighing in on, right, on how to use John Cena.
I don't think so either. But that is. But I'm thinking from if there's any type of philosophical shift with that company, and certainly we've seen it from a business perspective, what they've targeted trying to do in a variety of fields. That would be the way to go, as opposed to I think like the smart traditional wrestling idea, which I think is what Paul Levesque would ultimately want to think of himself as doing, would be like, let's use Cena to put over this next generation of stars. Yeah, something Levesque was known to do all the time as a wrestler.
If he's to lose a big match at the end, which like undoubtedly he'll have some big match at the end, mm-hmm. I think maybe it's just Roman Reigns, if we're fantasy booking here, that like, well, John Cena's going away, but Roman Reigns certainly isn't. And
kind of.
He'll be around.
Yeah.
And he's definitely not going away. And maybe that's the one that they haven't had like a really big match. They have had matches, right?
Do a big match when Cena came back, for like basically one quick program with Roman Reigns, which Cena just completely steamrolled Roman Reigns in. This is what before Reigns turned heel. It's a different version of Roman Reigns, but it was
that. Right. They were arguing over who's a draw. I remember that.
Yeah, and Cena said like they had to bring me back because you can't do your job. Cena just destroyed him. That was a really bad idea when they did that. And that was at like a B pay-per-view. It wasn't at like a SummerSlam or anything like that. It was at like a September pay-per-view, like if I recall correctly. But I think a Cena Reigns program now
SummerSlam would be totally different. 2021. SummerSlam
was
2021.
That SummerSlam?
Roman Reigns over John Cena in 23 minutes.
I think that I'm thinking almost of another match.
So there was like a, I'll scroll through. I think it's Stomping Grounds or something.
No, that wasn't Stomping Grounds. It was the awful Baron Corbin, Seth Rollins main event. That might have been, I might be forgetting that SummerSlam to it. Roman Reigns would have been a heel at that time by summer of 2021 because he turns heel in
No Mercy 2017.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Reigns over John Cena.
Yeah.
In LA. And that was minutes.
And that was like the big Roman Reigns is better than John Cena like takeaway. I forgot they even had the match in 2021. And that would have been heel Reigns. That would have been like bloodline kind of Reigns because that starts in 2020. He comes back at SummerSlam 2020 during the.
This would have been like his first pay per view back, I think, right? Because he came back. Oh no, he came back summer 2020, and this was a year after that. Okay.
Yes, this was almost a year after that. Like, because Cena was around right when they started live touring again. Like, I think they did like that big Money in the Bank show, and that was like, you know, they were drawing really well, and Cena was there. Like, Cena will draw just by being John Cena. I have no doubt about that. But I do think when you're talking about like. Big major events. I mean, who's he going to wrestle at WrestleMania? That's presumably should be a major match. I think like a CM Punk feud would be probably a good way to use both those star powers. I think maybe Punk would turn heel again because Cena, I think, is not going to turn heel. It might not matter really. But I'm really interested in seeing how they use him because. We're just talking about from a 2025 perspective. It's almost like what was I thinking of? What's all that? I can't remember the correct analogy, so I'm not even going to say it. But it's like, you know, you get all this money to invest, but you have to invest it in 1 year. It's like Brewster's Millions almost. And it's like, how are you going to use the Cena dates to your best advantage? When you listen to, like, I know that the calls now are TKO calls. They're not entirely WWE stockholder calls since the merger. What are some of, like, the main questions and thoughts you feel like have been reoccurring over the last year in terms of what people are asking about related to WWE?
I don't know. And, like, there's not that much that's specific to WWE, I guess I would say. There was a question last time about the international split and that they are doing fewer events and... You know, they are running fewer events, and Mark Spiro specifically called out the D markets that they don't want to go to as much anymore because the profit margin, if it's positive at all, is pretty thin. So they're doing fewer house shows. Yet at the same time, their revenue for live events is increasing because they're drawing more people and they're also increasing their ticket prices. That's probably the main thing. I mean, everybody's focused on Netflix, of course, and what that means. And if it results in not only good things for WWE, but maybe it gives another, you know, gives UFC another suitor for their rights, which are coming up for renewal soon. I would have to look at the transcripts and stuff, but that's what comes to mind.
I know back when I would listen to them more frequently.
Site fees, of course.
When I would listen to it more frequently a couple of years ago when Vince was on them, they were all a really consistent thought was like who was going to be the next John Cena. Like there was some apprehension about like talent developments, and they would say, you know, it takes we got the performance center, we've got NXT. It takes years and years for talent to really be molded until they become the next generation's WWE superstars. I imagine that apprehension is probably eased if it was relevant really at all, because they do feel like they're in a pretty good spot from a star power, at least for like the next year or two. I am kind of questioning. I am wondering what happens in the future beyond that, but.
Yeah, there was a time, like, as far as, so I've been listening to them since about 2014, since the W Network, and I would say there's, I'm sure I've listened to every single one. The time at which there was the most concern that would be interesting to wrestling fans, I think, was in around 2018, 2019, when ratings were on the decline, and there's always the cord cutting excuse to point to, but it was beyond the rate of cord cutting. And there were all different reasons that were volunteered, different reasons every call. And then the pandemic happened. And then it was because that their, you know, their audience wasn't there, which was true to an extent. And then they hired Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff to be the executive directors of Raw and SmackDown. But ratings still continued to decline. And no one could say what was the real cause of it, is that you got a head of creative who's, you know, holding everyone down and holding WWE down from developing its TV ratings, its ticket sales, its consumer businesses, even though its businesses were really strong. That was just sort of the elephant in the room. And that was like a small percentage of the call, while, you know, media rights were a discussion. Saudi Arabia was a discussion. Sponsorship, which is this, you know, this holy grail that maybe one day somebody can unlock in wrestling, is a discussion.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
I'm interested in seeing, like, on Netflix what kind of sponsors they do get for the live Raw broadcasts. I'm really interested in, like, anytime I watch streaming that has commercials in it, and I have a couple of streaming services, like my Hulu account, I get commercials. Peacock, I get commercials. Paramount Plus, I get commercials. Netflix, I get commercials too, actually, now I think about it. And like, I feel like a lot of streaming services, like, it's the same commercials like over and over and over again. And it's like mind-numbingly annoying. And I'm kind of curious to know, like, what's going to happen with Raw? Are we going to see like the same, like, five commercials spread out over these 3 hours every week? What kind of sponsors can they get? I guess, what kind of ad rates can they get being on Netflix? Is that going to, do you have any sense of, like, just in general, like, especially because Netflix has such a wide variety of content, how advertisers view Netflix in terms of the viewer and how valuable that viewer is to them?
I would think that, you know, I don't know anything about ad rates, but I would think if you're on streaming, you're on the most watched streaming platform amongst subscription streaming. You've got a much younger audience. You've got a really great proportionality of younger viewers versus what we see increasingly over time on traditional TV, where the median viewer is, you know, for something that's highly viewed is like 50, and is just going to continue to get older and older. And you want the younger demographics, because those are the people who are not loyal to brands yet.
Yes. And once you turn 50, you never buy anything new. Like, your decisions are just completely made up. That's what, these advertisers.
Mark Shapiro spoke specifically to the 18 to 34, the younger half of the key demo, on the last conference appearance he did, and talked about it. It's like toothpaste or anything else. You know, if you can get in front of somebody who's 18 to 34, you can sell them something. But, you know, once you're 35, you know what toothpaste that you use. And I'm over 35, and I think I've been buying the same toothpaste for a number of years in a row. So
there's obviously some logic to that, but it's always funny, like, how it's like so talked about. It's like the key demo, like, once you age out, now it used to be 18 49, you're talking to like 18 35, like,
Well, I would imagine it's just, you know, what do you want to spend? What do you exactly want to target? And the younger you get, the more open you are to trying different brands. And the older you get, the more experience you've had in life and the more things you've tried, and you know what's best for you.
This is not wrestling related, but I want to ask you a question. Brandon, how many times under your own volition, not because you switched jobs or anything, have you changed your insurance?
My car insurance?
Yeah, health, car, life insurance, whatever. How many times have you done that? Have you said, I'm fed up, I'm moving to a different insurer?
I think I had Liberty Mutual at first, was my first car insurer. Mm-hmm. Is that right? I'm with Allstate now. I switched because my premium went up for no reason. So I got a quote from Allstate. And maybe I was with a different insurer before Liberty Mutual. I think that's true. So I think there are three different car insurers that I've used throughout my life.
Yeah. So that's what?
And do I have other insurance? I have health insurance, but I've only had.
Car insurance is fine. Right. So you've switched your car insurance three times in how many years you've been a driver?
I guess since I've been 16. So
yeah.
10 years or so.
It's 20, 25 years, right? That's just to
throw about, it it's up. About, it's about 20 years. It's about 20, yeah. 21 years or so. Yeah.
So once every 7 years, just the amount of insurance commercials I see just on anything.
A lot. The caveman is back.
And talk about something we talk about making up your mind about something. And it's I have how often are people switching their insurance? Just to save a few months, First of all, just on paper, it sounds like it'd be extremely annoying and difficult for me to do. Switch my insurer from anything else.
Yeah, it's just a chore, I imagine, right? I should probably, as we're having this conversation, I realize, I should probably, I don't know if my premium is really fair. If I got a quote from Geico or somebody else, maybe I would save more money on my car insurance. Sounds like I'm doing a commercial here. But it's just a hassle. It's just so much friction to have to. Right. Get on the phone and give them all this information. It would be a multi-hour chore.
Yeah. Especially if you feel at the very least your current insurance is serviceable, if not.
I have no idea I cannot tell you what I pay for car insurance. I think I pay every 6 months. I think it's $500 something.
I know I pay every month, and I know because if I look through my expenses on my online banking account, I can see the money that's taken out each month for my insurance. But just the amount of time that is spent advertising for insurance, something that I'm never going to switch to. And I feel like that's true for a lot of things. Obviously, car commercials, right? I have bought one car in my entire life.
Yeah.
And honestly,
that's probably the biggest purchase you've ever made.
Yeah. Right. Right. So so I guess that kind of makes sense. I have never switched cell phone carriers. It's just the amount of time it's spent advertising. When I'm seeing something like pizza being advertised, where it's I could see an ad for Papa John's, be like, oh, that pizza looks pretty good. I'm going to get Papa John's next time. Presumably there's one near me. But the amount of, first of all, it feels like less things have TV commercials now. That is a completely unscientific statement by me, but it just seems that way. And it seems like the only commercials I ever see are for vehicles, insurance, cell phones, credit cards, and sports gambling.
How about Ozempic? Ozempic and whatever the other one is.
I get Ozempic.
Prescription drugs. Come on.
You know what? I think I mentioned this on a previous gentleman's wrestling podcast, but I think it's on Hulu, Sky Rizzy, which I believe is it's if you have eczema or something like that, or some sort of skin related thing.
These are things you'll see, if you watch the NFL games.
Yes. And so to me, it's
if you're watching an NFL game, know this is not a make good. This is prime time ad slots that we're looking at here.
I saw a report that Netflix is asking $5 million for 30-minute ad slots for the Christmas Day games.
Sounds about right.
I think being in advertising sounds like a great gig to me in terms of just being able to piss money into the winds.
This is like Mad Men, right? That was a great show.
What kind of toothpaste have you been using for the last
Colgate? What total whitening? Maybe.
So you're just going for the Colgate.
Yeah, that's what I've been buying. I don't know why their ads worked on me or something. And I think maybe there's fluoride in it. Remember, they would tell you like 24 hours a day, you're still brushing your teeth, even if you use this, you know, twice a day.
Yeah. I buy I'm broke, obviously. I buy cheap toothpaste.
Okay.
I'm an AIM guy.
AIM. Okay. Right. So, yeah. There's no like generic brand. They don't do generic brand of toothpaste.
Each supermarket probably has its own house brand.
Like I can't think toothpaste. Of a Wegmans brand tooth. There's no Wegmans brand toothpaste.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe you're right. I feel like AIM and Pepsodent are always like the cheapest ones. Like we don't have big Colgate money over here. We can't be spending $350 on a.
Is Colgate like high end? I haven't looked at the unit price per.
I feel like Colgate is not like there are more high end ones, but I feel like Colgate is like you're paying more for the name brand, leading name brands between Colgate and Crest. The viewers also want to know. I saw this recently. They want to know what razor you use to shave your dome.
Oh, so I don't use a razor. My head, I've only been shaving my head for a couple of years. So what I got recently is I got something from Amazon. I could look up the exact thing if you want, but it will now. So like shaving your head is a pain because I get hair all over the place and like I got to clean up after myself. I get the vacuum out afterwards. So this thing has a vacuum in it, which doesn't get everything, but it gets a lot of it. So there's less cleanup involved. So I'm just using a buzzer is what I'm saying here. I did it one time. I took a razor to my head and it's weird afterwards. Like my head is all smooth and like, because it's because it's a smooth surface, it's sticky, not like sticky because of moisture, but like I did not like it. So, no, I will shave it down. I will trim it down to the skin with an electric razor, electric trimmer, not razor. So, but yeah, that's what I do. I don't know what brand it is. It's not some big brand.
You never like cut yourself, do a little blade job?
No, I've never cut my head with a razor. I never bladed in a match or in a shaving attempt.
You never ran the blade?
No, never had a need to.
That's true. You didn't need to take shortcuts.
I draw all my money the old fashioned way.
Yeah. Just selling to those women and children in the front row.
That's right. The Remington vacuum beard trimmer, 13 length and style settings with adjustable length comb, 2 18-millimeter vacuum trimmer for beard, mustache, and stubble, recharge lithium battery, washable, removable blades is the SEO name of the product that I'm using. If you want to search for it yourself on Amazon.
Big endorsement from Brandon Thursday.
It is $59.99 though. So,
I mean, but how often? But you know, that stuff.
If I use it once a week. Yeah.
Yeah, if it lasts for a while, that's money well spent.
Anyway,
2025 WWE. Do you see any like major risk factors for WWE heading into this year?
The Vince stuff could always get worse, but it looks like enough time has passed. The Vince, that's a PR story, and they've done a pretty steadfast job of distancing themselves in the most non-noticeable way possible, while also in a kind of noticeable and intentional way at WrestleMania, letting you know that this company is a Paul Levesque company. We're going to define it in terms of the positive.
He gets his name listed on the executive producer of every show.
I saw that.
He makes for a guy who appears to not want to be in the spotlight at all, he makes a lot of appearances on television.
It's true. No, so the Vince stuff, he could get indicted. This looks unlikely to me at this point. And WWE could be implicated as more responsible. That could cast negative news onto WWE. Other than that, I mean, what could happen? Like your biggest stars could get injured, but even if like Roman Reigns gets injured, he could still appear on TV. CM Punk got injured, still appeared on TV a lot. What could happen other than
one of your wrestlers walks out of the company? In a rage,
they got plenty of them.
So, I guess, and I'm talking about like, just WWE has for the last several years been in a really strong boom period in terms of popularity, business metrics looking really strong, kind of across the board. There's been
AEW could get its act together and start competing with them.
Ups and downs, right? That's a good point.
But that also, I think, is unlikely.
With WWE, if you look at, okay, so if we look at other past like boom periods in WWE history, what was the undoing of those periods? If we go back to the like 80s, that's more of a slow decline as opposed to a sharp drop off. And I think you would point to talent aging out or just getting stale on top, right? Hogan's drawing power begins to wane. Egos get involved, right? He gets into his feud with Vince McMahon. Some attempts to create new stars like the Ultimate Warrior don't end up working out. But that's a slow decline.
I guess I would say, like, thinking on, and I've never thought about this way before, but like thinking back on the 80s and the 90s booms, those were both the product largely, in large part, right? The product of childhood fads. And this is not that. This is, these are kidults that are in, you know, that are excited about WWE these days. It's not buoyed by this overwhelming kid audience.
Not a kid audience necessarily. And certainly like the Attitude Era would be a little bit older, right? What the conventional wisdom is, right? Like the Attitude Era are adults or late teenagers who were children during the Hogan era in the 80s, right? I don't know if that's actually really true necessarily, but that seems to be the takeaway. That
I mean, I'm like, I may be projecting my own experience, but like I was 13 to 16 or something in those years. And that's, you know, speaking for people who are about my age, that's just something that a lot of people just aged out of once they turned 18, or, you know, it just became less cool.
Right. But I do think that a lot of the people who are have gotten into WWE over the last several years that weren't there in the years prior are people that at least were familiar with the WWE product beforehand. They're people that had watched wrestling at one point or another and have found a reason to reinvest. A lot of it is just people that were burned off by Vince and now Vince is gone.
There's just their engagement rate is much higher than it was 5 years ago.
So you're kind of pointing out like you don't see like the kind of children like
it almost like ties back to like to the ad phenomenon we're talking about in that like when you're young you cycle through all these things, right? And I think their core audience now is much older, not in a negative sense, but they're it's not teenagers and adolescents and young adults as it was in the Attitude Era. It's not overwhelmingly kids or adolescents like it was in the 80s. We're going to cycle through all the things that they like pretty frequently, but this is a largely adult audience with kids too, but not comparable to those two eras, so that I think they're not going to cycle through this to the same degree. Now keeping in mind this is not a boom period that's anywhere near the level of the Attitude Era or the 1980s period, but this is a significantly stronger period than it was 5 years ago.
The fact that we're seeing such a large like adult fan base is probably, I would say, like a good indictment of the downfall of the U.S. Public education system. But but realistically, we're seeing, I think my takeaway is like, my point was like in the 80s, the boom period kind of falls apart gradually, I think because of egos, talent aging out, not a really dynamic product in a lot of ways. It was very formulaic. With essentially the same wrestler on top for the entire time, and an inability to kind of follow up with a new and exciting wrestler that connected to the audience in a different way. And the Attitude Era falls apart for a couple of reasons, but I think the two biggest ones would be by far your biggest stars, The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, cease to be regular, consistent entities on your show. And we see a really significant drop off when those guys stop being around. And so if I were to look at like, the current era, like what are some things like, okay, could Roman Reigns walk out of the company like the way, or could he pursue like a more full-time Hollywood career if possible? And what kind of impact would that play on the company?
It's pretty likely that he will eventually.
That's what history tells us, right? That's what, you know, Cena did. That's obviously what Dwayne did. That's what,
I don't think it would be that big of a deal.
I think that WWE has a much better relationship now with catering towards balancing between those two worlds, as opposed to like The Rock not being in WWE for like what, almost 10, like 6-7 years, in terms of like wrestling a match seems pretty hard to believe that that would happen with Roman Reigns. Of course, I don't think Roman Reigns is like nearly as big of an individual star as The Rock.
Yeah. I don't see Roman Reigns becoming as big of a movie star as Dwayne.
Well, that's hard. I mean, I think like Cena is not as big of a star as The Rock, but Cena, I think, has gone on to have a very successful career in Hollywood. Or maybe he just likes to sit at home and count all his money. I think he likes to do that too. So, the risk factor would be, I would say, like, honestly, I think like Cody is a major figure in terms of he is your guy that's working your shows. That is your Roman is babyface now, but for a while has held it down as your number one babyface. Really, really, he is the real like Cena replacement, I think, in terms of like the role that Cena played across.
Even though
the
he's like the same age, I think they have the same birth year, Cody and Reigns do, but Cody is clearly like the next generation, the next iteration behind Reigns. Reigns goes on to do movies, Cody will still be there, presumably.
Yeah, well, Roman. I just think from a personality perspective, it's obviously worked for Roman going heel. And now that he's over as a babyface. But I don't see him. He's just his personality is not necessarily, I think, like as magnanimous as like a Cena was or as a Cody.
Yeah.
In terms of Roman doesn't do a lot of public appearances. Like he doesn't do a lot of, you know, especially these days, he doesn't do a lot of like, you know, late night talk shows, you know.
There was a quote from Triple H that saying that Reigns doesn't do a lot of these because it's not right for his character. He chooses not to, or maybe there's more to it for that.
Yeah, I think Cody is a much more natural fit. The guy to do all the Make-A-Wish and all the stuff that like the public facing baby face stuff. So in a lot of ways, so if we're talking risk factors, I would say like if something happens with Cody, like a significant injury that takes him out for a long period of time. Do you have a baby face that you can kind of pivot to replace his consistency, I guess? This is just from my personal perspective. And I will say this, that I have never been more disconnected from what the typical WWE fan seems to want. I'm not super high on the young talent on this roster. I still feel like if you look at the WWE shows, who are they relying on a lot? And it's in addition to people like Cody and CM Punk, it's Drew McIntyre, it's Kevin Owens, it's Sami Zayn. It's a lot of talent that has been there for a long time. Good talent, but not necessarily future building talent.
But they're all about 40 or older.
Yeah. Right. And that doesn't mean as much as it used to, certainly. We've seen plenty of wrestlers continue to churn out high profile years after they turn 40. But I am still hesitant on, like, again, when I was talking about Cena, like who is Cena going to do a program with besides Braun Breaker that you would feel kind of confident that they're going to,
I guess, if there's like a sort of long arcing risk here, it's that despite having a new head of creative who has a much better relationship with fans and is producing content that people are watching in increasing numbers, that it turns out there's a real difficulty with developing new stars that people do want to see. Mm-hmm. Or that just takes a lot longer of a time. And who are the names who are in the pipeline? Braun Breaker, Trick Williams,
Dominic
will be a lifer, I'm sure. Is there somebody, anybody from the women's side? Rhea Ripley's sure young. Like, Rhea Ripley's under 30.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think they would say like Tiffany Stratton. I'm sure people would, you know, if you ask them, they would say they're high on all these talent. I'm just incredulous that if you look at like as successful as WWE has been in getting over the last few years and definitely helping certain wrestlers get to a new level, a lot of it has been established wrestlers. It's bringing Cody back into the company after he had really built himself up as an individual star outside the company. It's bringing CM Punk, an established star, back. Pushing Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn up the card, which is really successful, but those are in a lot of ways really established guys that had been top guys outside of WWE and then within NXT. So it wasn't really necessarily a building up a new wrestler. I would say maybe like you could say like Jey Uso, who seems to be very popular as a guy who's really climbed up the card that was not seen necessarily as a potential main event.
What's the catchphrase?
Jey Uso, it's like a common one that other people use.
Yeet. You don't know?
Yeet. It's yeet. Yeah.
Yeah. This is what they do in the for people who are only listening in audio, which is everyone. This is what they do in the press box when Jey Uso comes out.
You're doing it right. You're leading it right. Yeah. You like you turn around and face everyone and you go.
No. I turn my face and I make eye contact with John Pollock. That's what happens when that happens.
Yeah. Well, he's doing it too, right? Yeah.
No, he's not doing it either. No.
Yeah. Brian Alvarez can't get into the Survivor Series press conference though. There is a but yeah, I mean that's what I would say just in terms of like where that next, but I don't see that almost as a 2025 issue. That's like a 2026 to 2027 issue. And by then, who knows? It's also possible. Look, you got Cody from AEW. It's also possible you take someone from AEW who.
Yeah, I think they would be very incentivized to do so. Yeah.
To who they can bring in and push back up the card. It was obviously hugely successful with Cody. We haven't really seen it done. I mean, they brought in Jade Cargill. I would say that hasn't necessarily worked out as originally intended. They certainly tried at first to present her as a game-changing star, but I don't think that has been the case for whatever reason. But there are people, I mean, Penta is going to come in and he's going to, if they let him just do a Zero Miedo thing, he's going to get over with that crowd. It's all crowd engagement, entrance, that kind of stuff.
And like, I think they would be really benefited to have, more strong Hispanic stars who are speaking Spanish. And Penta is like such a captivating character and can promo in Spanish. And I don't know what he's saying, but it sounds cool.
I wonder if that, you know, that is something that I would be interested in knowing about. I don't think Paul Levesque is nearly as regimented as Vince McMahon was, but would the company and the creative people in the company be comfortable with pushing a wrestler like that?
Who speaks Spanish and not, and doesn't like, is I can't think of him speaking English.
I don't think
really fluently.
I can see him like doing catchphrases, which is maybe all you need.
I think he can probably speak English to put together a match, but maybe not to do a promo or something like that.
I think when the WWE conundrum, right, is that they've wanted a Hispanic star to replace Rey Mysterio for decades now.
Yeah.
And
Del Rio.
Well, it's this
Eddie Guerrero
paradox, right? Where they really want a Hispanic star. And it's what's great is that there are tons and tons of really good Hispanic wrestlers out there. The issue is that
Paul Levesque doesn't see color.
That's true too. That might also be a hindrance. The issue is,
does he even know who's Hispanic and who's not Hispanic? Can he even identify that?
That's true. But you know, they want, at least Vince wanted, you know, they always wanted their Hispanic wrestler to be tall, speak unaccented English, and not wear a mask. Despite the fact that Rey Mysterio is by far the most successful Hispanic wrestler of all time, and he was, I guess he speaks really good English, but he's certainly not tall, and of course, famously wears a mask. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that led to like people like Del Rio getting, you know, a really big push because he was a Mexican wrestler that checked those boxes. The issue, what I find fairly fascinating with Paul Levesque is, right, when he was running NXT, the guys he was pushing were largely whoever was popular on the indies. Bring in Sami Zayn, bring in Johnny Gargano, bring in Adam Cole, bring in all these different talents. Doesn't really matter if they don't have Vince's TV look, or they're undersized, or they might not speak perfect English in the cases of some of the wrestlers. We're going to push them hard. So when Paul Levesque took over the, you know, main roster, it was, I thought Johnny Gargano was going to get a huge push on the main roster because clearly Levesque valued him really highly as a talent in NXT. But what has happened subsequently is we have not seen those undersized wrestlers really get pushed at all. It's been big guys that have gotten, you know, pushed. It's been, let's push Damian Priest. Let's push Walter. Let's push these big guys well over 6 feet tall.
Yeah. Which I think tells you that he does view who he's booking for differently.
Right. And this is in a lot of ways smart, right?
Which and, is he booked for his and audience. It tells you that he's not booking for himself, mm-hmm. which I think the previous head booker was not capable of distinguishing.
Right. This is a point in his favor in terms of like understanding when he was when he was booking NXT, he was targeting a very specific audience that would be invested in wrestlers like Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano. When he's taken over the main roster, he understood I got to push different people. I still think he could have like booked Johnny Gargano strong and Johnny Gargano would have gotten over. I don't think that's necessarily an issue, but that does bring up my point about if we're talking about like a Hispanic star or something like that, is this the kind of or like a Penta, is this a kind of company that is going to push that kind of person? They brought in Dragon Lee to NXT. They haven't really done anything with him.
He pushed Andrade strongly in NXT for a time.
They brought Andrade back, and I'm sure he's on every pay-per-view, right?
No, he's not doing much. Okay. At least he's not complaining about it on social media, though.
No, he respects his booker this time. He respects his lifelong booker.
That's right.
We'll talk AEW really quick here. AEW 2025. So Raw is moving to Netflix. Mm-hmm. AEW is now doing a simulcast on HBO Max starting, I believe, the first Wednesday in January.
Something like that, yeah. And that'll increase their viewership in actuality. In measurement, in terms of what I'm able to report, who knows? Which will make for some interesting conversations, I'm sure.
Yeah, that'll be an awesome day. I'm glad I'm not on social media as much anymore for that. Now you are a and this ties in WWE, I guess. I agree with this. You're kind of a proponent in that WWE getting the pay-per-views on Peacock was beneficial to the company's overall popularity because it made the pay-per-views, especially if you were already a subscriber to Peacock. And I remember, like at the time, there was like, 20 million subscribers to Peacock or whatever.
Yeah.
The pay-per-views are now way more accessible. So even if you're not a huge WWE fan, you're like, I'll turn on this pay-per-view and I'll watch it. And if you like it, you'll maybe you become a weekly TV viewer, you become a more contributing member. So
maybe instead of watching it once a year, you watch it three times a year. Yeah.
Maybe you buy a ticket when they come to a city or something like that.
Yeah.
AEW obviously will be going on HBO Max, which is it's a pretty sizable, it's significantly larger than Peacock, right? In terms of its reach.
Oh, it's hard to say. So yeah. I would say it might be similar. It's probably in terms of people who could turn it on. Yes. Because everybody who has access to HBO, the traditional channel, I think have access to Max.
Yeah.
That being said, if you look at the Nielsen gauge, which is this great donut chart that they publish every month, I should probably pull it up. It's very comparable to Peacock though, in terms of the actual use.
People that are using it. Yeah. This is like the Amazon Prime conundrum, right? In the sense of many, many, many people have Amazon Prime, but only a finite percentage of those people actually use Amazon Prime.
Prime is like I obviously need to pull it up. Prime is like number three or number four in terms of the most used streaming service, even though people have it for different. So Prime is just behind Netflix. So the order it goes, YouTube, which is not a subscription service, of course. And this isn't in terms of how much people are actually using it on their television. So this would not include any mobile use. This is just YouTube on the television and not YouTube live TV, but just the regular old fashioned YouTube. That's 10% of all TV time, period. Mm-hmm. And then Netflix has about 8%. Prime is about 3.5%. Disney Plus is about 2.4%. Hulu is another 2.4%. Then there's Tubi, Fox's free streaming service. Tubi at 1.7%. Roku at 1.6. I still haven't mentioned Peacock now at 1.4. This is for the month of September, if you want to fact check this. And 1.2 is Max, which is tied within this month Paramount Plus with 1.2. So like in theory, yes, a lot of people should have access to this, but it's a fraction. If let's compare WWE, it's a fraction of what Netflix's actual use is, let alone, the others, which is, it's less, but it is.
Shout out the Roku channel, right? Yeah.
The Roku channel, Tubi. If you follow Michael Mulvihill, the Fox analytics executive on Twitter, he's always bragging about Tubi and how underrated Tubi is. Yeah. Lots of people are watching it.
There's Pluto. There's
Pluto is at the bottom with just under 1%.
Yes. I like watching like old movies, and a lot of these streamers, with the exception of HBO Max, have like really pitiful selections from any movie that's more than like 10 years ago. But those fast channels have like, if you want to watch some old Hollywood, the fast channels are the way to go. That's what, how I have, you know, a Pluto. I don't even have a subscription, but
I watched Boys in the Hood recently on Tubi.
An ancient movie by streaming service standards. Yeah.
Ice Cube. Yeah. Okay.
Doughboy. I think you mean Doughboy.
Was that his character?
That's his name. Yeah.
Yes. Very good movie.
Yeah.
But it should help. You know, it will definitely help their viewership. I'm sure it'll hype up the first episode. And like, this is important because what TNT and TBS are in 65 million households. That's like less than half of the TV households. There's over 120 TV households in the United States. So only like half of them even could watch TNT or TBS if they wanted to.
Also, that's reaching a younger demographic, presumably, that's using
access. I'm sure. Yeah. Service. If you're watching on a streaming service, you're probably younger than somebody's watching on traditional TV. So,
and it's HBO, it's prestige television.
It's Max.
This is for, you know, well educated, high earning individuals that are going to be tuning in.
But it's definitely younger, so that's a more valuable ad demo, presumably.
And Netflix is doing this too, that's part of the reason AEW is simulcasting. Max is really, you know, aggressively starting to push live sports simulcasted that are on TBS and TNT. I'm sure we'll see a ton of it during the NCAA college basketball tournament. You see it with men's U.S. national team soccer games for, I think, both the men and the women. So you're seeing them really kind of push live sports, which I assume would drive up the people who are watching HBO Max in terms of people like, oh, I can watch this on HBO Max. I haven't decided if I'm going to watch it on TBS or Max.
For experimental reasons, I'll probably turn it on Max on the first night. But it should help. And it should offset some of what continues to be an ongoing decline in their attendance and I've extracted the coverage rating. Basically, I've estimated with a very high R squared. This is what everyone wants to know. What the coverage is of these networks, TNT and TBS. So I can just take the number of viewers that we all know and just divide that by. It's a long story. I've done the math that like their coverage rating is also significantly down, even adjust. So that is exactly adjusting for the decline in cable households.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier like AEW improving its popularity, potentially being a risk factor for WWE. I would almost say it's like a more of an inverse relationship where I feel like if WWE starts disappointing its fan base again, some fans will gravitate more back towards AEW. There is a relationship between the two of them.
It is, to some extent, is not complete zero-sum game, but it is, to some extent, a zero-sum game. Like, the more one does well is not good for the other.
Right. But they're not at war with each other or anything like that. They're both just competing.
No, if you're WWE, you are definitely not at war with AEW, at least outwardly. You barely know what AEW is. You will never bring it up in a conversation. But clearly they are the most direct competitor that you have. And yeah, sure, it's true that you're competing for time with all sorts of entertainment. But you're competing with nobody closer. Nobody has an overlapping audience to the degree that AEW does by far.
I mean, you're competing them really for talent.
You're definitely competing with them for talent. And you're competing with them for audience time, for wrestling time too, you know? And I think that's bared out in WWE's favor whenever you see a Saturday night like or a Saturday. Or like a middle of the day PLE on Peacock and Collision's viewership on the same night hours later seems to be affected.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm interested in. This, I think it's Collision that's going to be airing directly after one of the college football playoff games on TNT.
Oh, is it? Oh, wow.
So we're probably going to get one of those big ratings for Collision.
So in April, was it April of this year? There was some sort of basketball game. Was it a March Madness?
It might have been. It was April.
A Swerve promo was seen by an enormous audience on Collision or Rampage for a few minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, well, there was the famous SmackDown after, like they ran the Friday NFL, Black Friday.
Christmas 2020. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, this anomaly. The highest since Christmas 2020 when they followed a Saints game. Saints and somebody.
It's like Mercedes Moné, I think, had a match, I think, in like the opening few minutes. I was like,
Mercedes Moné had a match on SmackDown.
I just, you know, I call people by the names they are now, unless they are either, unless they're Valter, then who will always be Valter to me?
Okay.
And if I can remember what their name is, sometimes I can't remember what their names are.
No.
What does WrestleNomics have in store for us in 2025?
I'm going to start doing a weekly written report. That'll be news and sort of an all-in-one report. Also look at TV ratings and attendance. I haven't prepared the attendance part yet, but it's a little bit of analysis of quarter hours and YouTube as well as whatever else is happening in the news.
Are you going to be getting like a very small percentage of like TV pay-per-view orders and then like extrapolating that across a really wide and inconsistent margin to tell us pay-per-view buys are up or down?
No, I will not be doing that. But if I do, I will be transparent with my methodology. And I'll continue to be doing show reports with the TV ratings, the attendance from WrestleTix, YouTube data, cage match reception data, which is out there for every weekly TV show, WWE and AEW, quarter hour reports for those shows as well. What else do I do? I do monthly reports on different things too. This is all on the Patreon, by the way.
Yes, you can find all this on patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Also, WrestleNomics.com, the website. And you're still doing the weekly podcast with John?
No. Yes. Okay. Yes, I am doing Pelican First and every Wednesday, yes.
Yeah.
That is free for everybody.
Yes. So if you want to see John Pollock do the lead the Yeet chant.
Like you won't see that. You won't see that on ever. And neither on a podcast or probably in real life at all.
All right. Thanks a lot, Brandon, for coming on the show. And thanks, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you again after a while.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every day when you log into ChumbaCasino.com, the ultimate online social casino, you get a free daily bonus. Imagine if you got daily bonuses in other parts of your life.
I chose French fries over loaded French fries.
I asked Stuart from accounting about his weekend, even though I don't care.
I updated my operating system without having to call tech support.
Collect your free daily bonus at ChumbaCasino.com now. And live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello. Do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.